Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Evolution of a Snake. I'm Zach.
And I'm Madeline.
And this is our Fearless Taylor's version, the re-recordings, remix, revamped, remastered edition.
The re-up.
The re-up. Pink Friday.
Yeah.
So we are definitely going to have a shorter episode today because, I mean, what else is there to say? We have discussed this album at length previously, but I suppose there are new elements that we can go over. So I was thinking maybe we should start with the vault tracks. Madeline, what are your overall thoughts on the vault tracks?
Where do I start? Honestly, I would say one thing that I think that I've forgotten about in all the hubbub is that ultimately at the end of the day, that for all of these songs, there was a reason that they didn't make it onto the album. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, it's not that I'm saying that they're bad. Like, none of them are genuinely bad, except for one of them, I think is probably the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. But that's another story. But honestly, to me, Mr. Perfectly Fine is probably the best one, in my mm-hmm. personal opinion. It fits in with the record. It's a total fucking bop. And I feel like the reason it got cut is because it was too pop. And that's, I don't think it was because of any other fucking reason, except for maybe they didn't want to have two absolute takedowns of Joe Jonas on one album. But I say, why not? Too powerful. But also, I mean, I don't think it got cut for any other fucking reason other than it was too poppy, which is fair because it definitely was. But it still kind of fits. Like, I feel like it was as pop as You Belong With Me was. But then You Belong With Me was the pop song on the record anyway. Anyway, you get what I'm getting at. Like, it wasn't cut for any other reason but that. But some of the other ones, it's like, yeah, I know why this was cut.
With Mr. Perfectly Fine specifically, to me, that is a song that was like written in the like space between Fearless and Speak Now. You know, it was a little too juvenile to go on Speak Now, just like theme wise. But in terms of the production and how it sounds, I mean, it sounds like a Speak Now song, like The Story of Us, that kind of energy I'm getting from it. It's also a solo co-write, which makes me think, like, it's Taylor's the only writing credit on it. So it makes me think that it probably was cut from Speak Now just because it was a little immature. And the storytelling is very advanced and developed. You know, there's a good narrative going on. It reminds me of the formula for songs like mine. So I think that this was for Speak Now, which makes me scared of what the vaults for Speak Now have in store for us. And I'm just going to throw it out there right now. I think the vault is fucking empty. If this is anything to judge by, there is no vault. My main problem with the vault songs for Fearless is that most of them are not Fearless songs. Like, Mr. Perfectly Fine is pretty much the only one that I could like maybe safely say was written around the Fearless time. The rest of them are honky tonk outtakes that we've heard or have been, you know, remixed, remastered, reimagined. But just, they don't quite hit properly. They feel like debut songs. I'm not sure that I'm getting what I need from them. I was so excited for We Were Happy and That's When. And I guess, like, I just realized when I heard them, like, fully produced that they're just not good. Like, they're not bad, but they're not good songs, you know? The reason why they slapped so hard as demos was because they were demos. They were good for a demo. They were not good to be, like, fully produced songs. I was especially let down by We Were Happy. I don't really know why, but I just was expecting something much better. And I will say the vocals are definitely a huge improvement because the We Were Happy demo vocals, ooh, they were really fucking bad.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, We Were Happy like studio demo, it was a lot bigger of a song. Like, it was like theatrical, it was like mm-hmm. this huge story. And then they like kind of like on the production for the one that they actually put on the album, they like super like, it's a lot more like reserved. It's just supposed to be like a really sad song. And the thing is that I think that there's like a nugget of like a really, really fucking good song in there, but it's like there's just some lyrics that are just fucking idiotic. What circus? What circus? It's just not, it doesn't hit. It's like, we snuck into the circus. Okay.
And
are you gonna say anything else about that, or you're just sneaking into the circus? And then I hate when she says, like, that's sort of how I feel right now. It's like, what? That's sort of how I feel right now. It's just juvenile. And it's like, it makes me sort of irritated that she had this opportunity to go in and like rework a song that quote unquote nobody had heard. And she just like chose to not like really fuck with it and make it like a really fucking good song. she just like, oh, here's exactly what it was, except for it's kind of a little bit sadder because we changed the production on it.
Which I would accept if it was a song we'd never heard before. But bitch, we've been hearing this.
Yeah, and the bridge is just not that good. It was never good in the first place. So it's like, why didn't you just change it? It's weird that she went in and she changed the one thing. Like, why?
Yeah, okay. I didn't even... Okay, here's the thing. Bye Bye Baby was a new song to me. So when I saw the track list, I was like... Yes, we have so many songs that I've never heard before. But then Madeline alerted me to the fact that it was like one thing reworked.
I fucking knew it. I knew she was gonna put that bullshit ass song on the record. I don't know how I knew, but I was like, I know. And I would obviously, I fucking hate the one thing. And you know, no real reason, but it just stunk of a song that she like held on to for years and was never gonna let go until she could release it. And of course she did. I knew it from the second that little do-do-do-do-do-do started up in the beginning. I was like, I swear to fucking God, this is the one thing. I'm quitting. I couldn't believe she did that to me. Was it like a ploy?
This is the whole issue for me, is that these songs are not Fearless songs. I wanted a whole like narrative conclusion to Fearless, but I think the genuine tea is that when the Platinum Edition came out, the story was complete. Like there are no more vault songs from Fearless to put on it. So she had to go back into the public domain, which is where she's getting all of these songs because most of them have existed in some shape or form. And she's pulling them out as along with Mr. Perfectly Fine to fucking save the day, because that is, you know, the undiscovered supermodel.
I think for me, like, I don't know what I think about this quote unquote vault, if it's real, like what it is, what's going on, if she's really just like combing fucking Tumblr looking for songs or like what she's doing. I think that I will know.
She's logged on to Taylor's Inner Circle, exactly. And she's going through the descriptions fucking, and she's like, oh, this one sounds good. And it's terrible because
she fucking
Steve's descriptions were catfishing, essentially.
They were. I mean, the best example I have for this is probably Firefly, that one, and Honey Baby. You know, he's like, beautiful song about a young girl, like, you know, loving life, and you get the song and it's like, this fucking, she's singing through a toilet bowl, A, B, it was recorded on a toaster, C, it's just horrible. It's like, why does he lie?
Well, what about R-E-V-E-N-G-E? I mean, his description described it as like the most clever way that a word has ever been spelled in a song of all time.
I think he's like has his head so far up her ass. He cannot say this is an okay song. You know, he has to come up with something.
Also, he like lives to put other people in misery, so I think that that's part of the fun for him.
Like, so I want to know, like, is there truly like a circle? Is it just Steven? Like, is there other people?
Well, okay, I guess we should give some context for the listener. So basically, Steve Hall is the ringleader of all of these rares that we're talking about that we've heard before. So that's We Were Happy, You All Over Me, That's When, and Bye Bye Baby, formerly known as One Thing. So is that he had a website back in the day called darkbluetennessee.com, which had an exhaustive list of every leaked song known in existence. I'm confident that he had every single one, pretty much, except for Mr. Perfectly Fine, interestingly. But then, I mean, why did Dark Blue Tennessee shut down, Madeline? Do you know?
I can't remember. I feel like one day it was just gone. And I don't know. I think it was because
now taylorsinnercircle.com exists and it's basically the same thing, but it's just, I don't know, like remixed and remastered.
I have a vague memory of there being like a message on darkbluetennessee.com, like after the site was wiped, and it was like, I don't, songs are leaking, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like it's getting like, we draw too much attention to the songs and people are finding them, something like that. But it's like funny because at the time I remember thinking like they're done because they're never going to be able to get any new songs because they're under such tight lock and key. But apparently they have gotten new songs, which absolutely blows my fucking mind.
Well, they allegedly have songs from fucking Lover. Like they have one called Need.
I do not believe. Like there's no fucking way. Because I'm
See, I don't believe it either, but then again, they knew that Folklore was going to happen before it came out, and the crazy thing is that the label didn't even know. So how the fuck did Steve know?
I'm telling you, it's an inside job. It's Andrea Swift or it's nobody.
Taylor.
It's Taylor feeding Steve information. For what? That's the thing. It's like
actually the exact kind of thing she would do, though.
To like get people hyped, use Steve for promo. That's so fucking weird to me. It's so weird. The whole thing is bizarre. Like, I wish I knew more about, like, the inner workings of the inner circle, but I really don't. It's as much a mystery to me.
And we've been following it for many years, and even still, we are as in the dark as the rest of the people are. All we know is that he writes fake-ass, stupid descriptions of songs that are not that good, and he tries to make them sound like number one hits. And you know what? There's a reason. Like you said, Madeline, there is a reason that these songs never made it onto an album, because some of them suck.
Dude, especially on a record like Lover that has a bunch of rejects on it already because she wanted a fucking 18 song long album for something. It's like, I don't believe that there's a song that she cut that's
but didn't make it onto Lover.
Yeah, I mean, it's just hard for me to believe, but
the bar was so low when Me was there, you know.
Yeah, it's like, if there's some incredible song, why the fuck didn't she just put it out? And he's talking about, well, I'm sure it would have been a fan favorite. It's like, really? I
don't think she would have put it fucking on the album if it was a fan favorite? I mean, if there is a song from Lover that is not on Lover, I can guarantee you it's a shitty fucking song.
Yeah, and there's a reason for that. Fucking.
There is a reason. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more in depth about the other Vault songs. So when You All Over Me was announced, I famously had a breakdown on Twitter. I lost my damn mind because I was so angry at her. For one, faking that The Vault was something we'd never heard before. Two, picking one of the weirdest songs to lead the fucking Vault singles for. This song, nobody fucking talked about this. There were 100 Rare songs that people could not stop talking about, discussing, trading. You All Over Me was like on the fucking bottom of the list.
And what, it's random because there was no personality to that song whatsoever. I forgot that it even fucking existed. Because I probably listened to it once and was like, I don't need that in my catalog. I'm good.
It's boring.
There's nothing to it. And really, and this is just, I've been saying this for so many of these fucking songs, is that all these reject songs, she has went through and mined them and picked out specific like pieces and like metaphors that work better in other songs. And so when you hear You All Over Me, it's literally just like a shitty country version of Clean. That's literally all it is. Nobody sees that. I see it. It's I won't say it's garbage. I take that back. It's not bad. It's just juvenile. Boring. Like, it's just not, I don't know. I don't really have anything else that.
So when she announced that as the first one, you can imagine that I knew there was garbage coming, because if that is the star of the fucking Vault songs, then we're in trouble. I don't know why the fuck she didn't leave with Mr. Perfectly Fine. Everybody loved it. I guess she wanted to do something like fake deep, and You All Over Me is certainly fake deep.
It is. Those the lines in the first verse, like, she's trying so hard to say something profound, and it does kind of make me think, but like, not that much. I don't know what the fuck she's talking about. Muddy tires reminds me of you. What? What does that mean?
It makes you think, and then it makes you stop thinking altogether.
Yeah. It's just juvenile. I don't know how else to describe it. Like, it's just like very basic. I don't know. It's just not that good.
It's just not it.
Yeah, it's just not it.
And you know what? I was, I think, most let down by That's When, because if you hear the demo, seek out the demo, obviously there is a guy singing on it, but he does not get a fucking verse, first of all. He doesn't get a verse. It's backing vocals only. It sounds good. And That's When is like a boppy song. To me, it was like an upbeat song. I could see it with like You Belong With Me kind of production. It has a really catchy hook, even though the lyrics are shall we say underdeveloped, but this rework of it, I feel like, sucks all the like cuteness and personality out of it and tries to make it like a White Horse vibe, which is just not what this song is. And when Keith Urban came in growling at me on the second verse, I was done. I was like, this is a teenage girl song. There is no space for a man to be singing on this, let alone on Fearless altogether. So I was very upset at that. Then it comes to the chorus, and the mixing, like the vocal mixing, fucking sucks. You can like hear Taylor in the background, but Keith Urban is singing the low harmony much louder, and then Taylor comes in full force. It's a mess. To me, it was just a whole mess.
I kind of agree. Like, I think it's cute. Like, it's definitely like a song that if it comes on, I'm not going to turn it off because it's fine. I don't really mind Keith Urban that much, But again, it's like, why does he need to have like a whole verse? Like, does it need to be worth it for him to come in so you feel like obligated to give him a whole verse? Because it didn't have to happen. He could have just sang background vocals. I don't understand. She always has to duet with the guys that she works with. I don't get that. I don't get it.
Yeah, can't we just give them a little hmm-hmm in the background?
Yeah, give them, but just like fucking Maren Morris. Well, all she got was hmm-hmm. That's all she got. And nobody had a problem with that.
You know what? It made the song better. So why don't we apply that same energy? I think you're right, though. Like, she needs to give them a little bit of space if she wants to get them on. But then just get, like, a random guy to sing. Get Paul Sidoti on the mic.
Yeah. I would love to see him on the mic, honestly. It'd be better than having to fucking have Keith Urban get a whole ass fucking verse. I mean, again, it's like, I don't mind him, and I think he has a pretty good voice, but, like, it's just, like, I don't listen to Taylor Swift songs so I can hear some fucking guy singing. And this has been my opinion since the beginning. But nobody cares what I have to say because she keeps bringing him in. So whatever.
So let's move on to Madeline's favorite vault track, which is Don't You. Madeline, would you like to kick this discussion
off? I'd really like to say that I have a lot to say about this fucking song. But I am telling you right now, I have not listened to it the whole way through. I have not listened to it the whole way through. Have not finished it once. It's like, okay, do you know when like in like spy movies and stuff, they like... there's like a sleeper agent and they put like trigger words inside his head and then all of a sudden he like awakens him and he turns into like a monster. That's what that song does to me, and I don't know why. It's something about the production meets these like frankly just absolutely horrible lyrics. Frankly, the song starts and she says, hey, like, are you kidding me? I haven't made it past the second verse at any point. So I can't listen to it. I can't. There's something about it that it's almost like nails on a chalkboard to me. It's bad. I really don't like it.
Well, I will tell you that you don't need to listen to it all the way through. It is, I mean, okay, I think it has a pretty melody and I like the chorus. It's not a wow, obviously, but none of the vault songs except for Mr. Perfectly Fine are. What I will say, though, is that when I was listening to it, I was so fucking confused. And I knew instantly that Jack Antonoff got his dirty mittens all over this track because it sounds like a song from 1989. What the fuck is it doing on Fearless Taylor's version? It does not sound anything like anything else on Fearless. And if it's a vault track, it's supposed to adhere to the story and go with the theme. And this song is just, you know, a continuation of like 1989 and the quieter moments on Rep. I feel like Jack Antonoff just got very carried away doing this song, and it was inappropriate and rude.
It was really inappropriate. It was incredibly inappropriate. It was like almost perverse what happened to this song. And apparently there are people out there who have heard the demo. I haven't. I have no memory of ever hearing this fucking song. I don't remember it.
I don't think this exists. Also, it doesn't exist on Taylor's inner circle. So I think they're lying, whoever's saying that.
It's just, I mean, to me, I don't...
Did it go by a different name?
Maybe. It's possible. But somebody said that they've heard it before. Not me. And I...
Not I.
Wouldn't have missed it. So I don't... Fuck it. There's very few, if any, Taylor Swift songs that I have never been able to listen to all the way through. I think this might be the first one. And I don't know why. Like, I do think it's bad, but like, even bad songs, like, I've heard A Perfectly Good Heart all the way through, like, many, many times. This fucking song is something else. There's something laced within the song that is just not good. And I can't explain it or describe it.
I have many Taylor songs that I don't want to listen to all the way through, but I have. I have to say the one that I haven't listened to all the way through since, I don't think I even listened to it on my first listen, is Happiness. I can't.
Interesting.
It's too boring. Oh, no. Happiness, I can. Dorothea.
Oh, Dorothea. That is like
instant skip.
Interesting. Okay.
All right. So I guess we can get into the album. Instead of going track by track, because they are pretty much the fucking same thing, Madeline, I was thinking we could point out like songs that have had major improvements or songs that have gotten much worse and songs that are exactly the same.
Okay. For me, probably the one that I immediately didn't like was You Belong With Me. It something, it's just weird. There's something wrong with it.
She's ruined it somehow.
It's like, You Belong With Me, but like through the looking glass. Like something's weird with it and I don't like it. Maybe it's the fact that a 31-year-old woman is singing it. Maybe it's something in the production. I don't know, but it's weird. Something ain't right. And I don't like it.
Literally the second that it came on, I knew it was different. Like the first second that it came on, it's the intro. There's something like the instruments are different. She tried to like, I think she tried to make it a bit better. And that, I mean, you can't
take perfection. You can't take perfection. Exactly.
You can't recreate excellence. That is the main problem here. But the vocals also sound weird. Like the chorus sounds completely different to me. I think it's maybe the absence of the country inflection because she definitely got rid of that for the re-record. So I think that maybe that's what makes it weird, but it also seems choppy. Like it sounds like multiple takes put together, which is actually a problem I had throughout the record. But I think it's most notable on this song and another one.
What's the other one?
Forever and Always.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I hadn't heard about this yet. I was honestly so let down by Forever and Always.
Forever
and Always one. I was kind of like, I didn't hate it, but I wasn't wowed by it like I thought I would be.
I thought that the last 30 seconds of it were great. Like, obviously, Taylor's old vocals did not have the range to sing what she had originally written. Yeah. So that last kind of chorus where she goes buck wild sounds great. She's literally, like, screaming it at us. But for the rest of it, I noticed a severe amount of auto-tune throughout. Like, you know when she sings that line where it's like, where is this going? Thought I knew it for a minute, but I don't anymore. That part, it's the going. You can literally hear the tuning on the fucking track, and to me that is just not necessary. Forever and Always is like supposed to be like kind of like a spitting casual song. I don't feel that it needs like that level of correction. And I guess also like there are certain things you can't recapture because, you know, Forever and Always was a last minute addition to the album. It was an angry song. It was full of rage. She was so close to the situation and now she's so far away from it. So there are certain lines in the song that just don't hit the way they used to, like Scared Little Boy. I mean, she had me shaking in my boots the first time I heard it. And this one, I was kind of like, okay.
That's interesting to me because I also agree that there's emotion missing in the re-record, but it's weird because in Mr. Perfectly Fine, she's out there fucking, you'd think that this shit happened last week, but in Forever and Always, she completely lets all of it go, which I don't understand that. I don't get that. Like, what is that?
Is she bored of these songs?
Maybe, but it's like, how do you get bored of Forever and Always? Come on. That's a classic.
I mean, there's something wrong with you if you do.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I thought that on the same wavelength, Forever and Always, the piano version was much improved from the original The original, when I first heard that she was doing the piano version of it, obviously I lost my mind, as did everybody else. But something about it always sort of fell flat, and I think it was the vocals because she tried so hard and you could tell she was trying like too hard and it just did not fucking work. But the new one I actually quite like a lot more than the original.
I think that her skill as a vocalist that she's found kind of later in her career is her dynamics. Like when she gets really like soft and quiet, that to me is when she sounds like the most emotive and like most powerful. So the piano version really did that for me because her lower register is like much more lush and like rich and full. And also she played with the arrangement slightly. Like there are slight alterations in this song that really make it better. And the backups, like the harmonies at the end, which was my favorite part of the piano version, are so,
they're really
so
good.
Pretty.
Yeah, they're really good. I enjoyed it.
Another song that I would say is an improvement on the original is Tell Me Why. And I was so excited for this and she did not fucking disappoint.
It was really fucking good. And then like, I hadn't even thought about it like vocally. I don't think I ever really noticed when I was, you know, like listening to like the original version throughout all these times. Like it's kind of a hard song for her vocally, which I don't think I ever knew, but listening to it now and like how she's kind of like, it almost like the way that she delivers some of the lines is like she almost like deliberately wanted to point out that she's gotten a lot better at singing and like emoting because the fucking I mean, it's just crazy. Some of the ways that she sings the lines is like, holy shit, why are you fucking screaming at me? Like for no reason. But it does.
The first time around, she was like, she was not equipped to handle this song. No, as in, she like, really wasn't. The vocals, I mean, even on the track, the original track, it doesn't sound amazing. But the very last part of Tell Me Why, when she's really going for it. But this re-record, there's something about it. And it sounds like she's really into the song. And I think that that seems to be what's the make or break with the re-recordings, is how into the song she is. Because with Tell Me Why, I could feel her like presently kind of revisiting everything she was writing about. Whereas with Forever and Always, she was kind of detached in a way. Do you know what I mean?
I'm also kind of sitting here thinking about, like, when is the last time you think Taylor played Tell Me Why, let alone really thought about it? You know what I mean? Never. So it's like interesting to me, because obviously she's played Forever and Always a lot, thought about it quite a bit too. But it's like, Tell Me Why, it was one that I would have thought that was like she totally forgot about. And like maybe that kind of like not constantly playing it, she was like, fuck, this cassette song kind of hits.
And that would explain why The Other Side of the Door sounded so good too. Exactly. That was another re-record that I really liked.
It's so fucking good. Absolutely delivered in all senses of the word. And it's because it never got its time in the spotlight. Everybody wants to talk jump then fall. Who gives a fuck? And because of that, The Other Side of the Door never had her time in the spotlight. I don't think she's ever played that song live. I don't think she's ever played it live, to my knowledge. Well,
that's because she couldn't attempt the bars live. I really think it probably took her multiple takes and like the lyrics in front of her face to get it all in one go.
I feel like today she could do it.
Oh, today she's a new woman.
She's a new woman.
She's better. Like, it actually, that one for me was that and Tell Me Why are clear, like, better improvements of the originals.
Exactly. I feel the exact same way.
Oh, also, Hey Steven went the fuck off.
Oh my God. It went off.
And
the
we
way
were making
in.
Fun of that before we it were. Came out. We were like, these clowns who love Hey Steven. It's such a weird song. Or it was just kind of a nothing song. Like, it was cute, it was dated. But this re-record, I feel like you can hear her sense of humor in it, which is what makes it so pleasurable, and the laugh feels like a real genuine laugh, not like her forced kind of like haha.
Exactly.
It really felt like she was looking back on her previous dramatic self and being like, wow, I was such a fucking drama queen.
It was fucking weirdo.
It was so fun to listen to.
It is a really fun song. I was really impressed by it, because I was sort of on the fence about what I thought it was going to be like as re-recorded, because I was like, this is one of those ones that I know she doesn't want to re-record, because come the fuck on. But I'm really glad that she like embraced it and was like, it's a silly fucking song, so we might as well just go with it. You know what I mean?
I mean that last part, like, it's just so fucking ridiculous, like the part where it's all those other girls, they're beautiful, but would they write a song for you? Like,
you know what, back then I thought that she literally was changing lives with that shit. I thought it was the most clever, the most brilliant. When I went to the Fearless store, my shirt said, all those other girls, well, they're beautiful, but would they make a t-shirt for you?
Oh, yeah, would they? I mean, yeah, they all did.
They all fucking did.
No, but that was a game-changing lyric for her at the time. I feel like she was very proud whenever she got to utter it live. So, you know, I mean, it just speaks to her derangement as a 17, 18-year-old girl. And that's what we came here for. That's why we're all employed to this day. We love her being crazy.
And it works. It works every time.
So also, You're Not Sorry definitely benefited from a vocal rework. I still don't love that song, but the vocals are good.
Yeah, the vocals are good. That was one of those ones that was really ham-fisted. Back then, like when I was like 15, 16, it really resonated with me for some fucking reason. But once I got older, I was like, this shit is kind of just like ridiculous. Like, it's just dramatic, like overwrought. Yeah, it's way too much. So, but the vocals sound better on the re-record for sure.
I was expecting a big improvement for Change, but she kind of fumbled the bag with the last Hallelujah note.
Actually, it's funny because I feel like I listened to it, the last note in specific, the first time that I listened to it. I feel like I played it back like 2 or 3 times because I was like, it's good, but when she ends it, there's something about it. I don't know.
She missed the timing or something.
Which is weird because, like, what, girl, you couldn't have just taken another take? Because this sounded better live at the fucking ACMs back in fucking whatever year that was.
2008.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, is that to me, overall, I felt like this was rushed in some way. Like you can hear different takes comp together. It's the vocals are a little sloppy in some points. It's not note for note, which is what she was intending it to be. It's almost there, but it's not quite. And I just wonder, like, what kind of timeline did she do? I feel like she sat down in one day and was like, I'm going to bang it all out and I'm never going to do this again. So I think that reflects, because if she had, you know, studied the songs and really kind of, you know, tried to get back in touch with what it was, it could have been better. But, you know, who else is doing it in the first place?
Yeah. And that's another thing that I kind of felt like too, is like, it's always going to be weird to me because I listened to the originals for like 13 fucking years. So you and I are going to notice the differences like at the snap of a finger. And I feel like she's hyper aware of that, but it's weird because it's like, oh, how could you have gotten the timing off? You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. I'm not saying that.
Yeah,
I think
it just doesn't make sense because the level of attention that she's paying to some parts of it doesn't carry out to like every single aspect of the re-records.
No, frankly, so I feel like You Belong With Me was made in a chop shop, which like I don't understand because that's kind of like the flagship song. Like, why would you fuck that song up out of all of them? I don't know.
It just sounds weird. That is probably the biggest. Weird. Yeah, I mean, it's one of her biggest hits. Like, you would think that that would be the one that she would painstakingly, like, I don't know, have the original recording in one ear while she's recording it to make sure that she's getting it exactly the same. But You Belong With Me really hinges on this kind of, like, wide-eyed, girlish, slightly snarky, but very wistful tone that I feel like she just doesn't have anymore. So no matter how she tried to do it, it was going to be different. So I feel like she just gave up and was like, okay, well, here you go. This is the best I got.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because, I mean, it's just one of those songs that, like, you kind of have to be an 18-year-old girl for it to work. Otherwise, it just sounds weird, which it does. It just sounds fucked up.
The Way I Loved You was pretty good.
Oh, yeah, I like that one. That one was good. I mean, there's really only You Belong With Me is the one that I have, like, an issue with. The rest of them, I'm like, okay. You know what I mean?
To me, Fearless and 15 and The Best Day sound exactly the same. Like, I can't really pick out many. There are a few, but I can't pick out like differences that make it hard to listen to.
15 is super, super similar, as is Fearless, the song. It's and it's almost like interesting because those are like the first two. So it's like maybe she did them chronologically.
She's trying to hoodwink us.
Yeah.
Love Story was pretty good. I really like the re-record of Love Story as well.
Yeah, I'm getting like super used to it too. Like I put it on my work playlist. So it's like, for all I fucking know, this is the original version.
Well, I mean, this is the intention, right?
Yes,
but
exactly.
15 was sweet. I think that like, I don't know, there is something kind of like, what's the word? There's something bittersweet about her singing this when she's 31, you know?
Yeah, it's almost kind of, and I was thinking about this the other day, like kind of thinking about like how important it is or it was like for these songs to exist when they existed and to stay the way that they were, because like that's how she felt at like that's how her voice sounded at the time. So it's almost kind of sad. And you know, like everybody, like all these people who mostly just stream her music talking about like, oh, we're just gonna get rid of them, like we're not gonna listen to the old versions anymore, blah blah blah. It's like, I can't do that.
Those songs are literally part of my life. I know that sounds so weird, but I have listened to those songs, like I want to say at least one of them from every album every day for like 12-13 years. So it's not so easy to just part with the master recordings when she does a fuck up like You Belong With Me.
I know, it's like I can't listen to the new You Belong With Me. If I want to listen to You Belong With Me, it's going to be the original one. Because that new one, I can't. There's something about it.
I want to listen to the new ones and feel like they are exactly the same but better. I don't want to listen to them and think these are not the same and it sounds worse.
Exactly. She really, honestly, she screwed the pooch with You Belong With Me. I'm going to say it now.
White Horse sounds the same too.
White Horse does sound the same.
So she has the same producer for the whole album, pretty much other than the vault tracks. And his name is Christopher Rowe. And I have never heard of him before, but he's done a lot of, he worked with Big Machine very recently. He did mixing for them. So I'm kind of like, what? He also mixed the Speak Now World Tour album. So
really,
I guess
this is all
she has worked with him for some time. Also, I was wondering, like, why didn't she just get Nathan Chapman back to come back and do it again? But well, apparently because, he is still, like, working with Big Machine.
Well, not that, and also he's a Trumper. But yeah, he was, like, when Taylor made that post about Marsha Blackburn, he, like, showed up and said all kinds of shit. Because he's, like, a mega Uber, like, Trumper Republican. Speaking of screwed the pooch,
he really fucked himself over there.
Yeah, no, he did. He really did. Like, imagine, like, you get into a political spat with Taylor Swift on Instagram. Next thing you know, she's recording her old albums and you get 0% of the pay cut, even though you worked on the original album because you had to run your fucking mouth.
Was it worth it? Yeah, was it
no,
worth it?
No, it was not Donald? Worth it at all.
So yeah, that's the standard edition. I guess, what did you think of Come In With The Rain and Superstar? The same,
you know, I Come In With The Rain, very, very similar. Like, I have absolutely no thoughts about it because that's one of my favorite Taylor Swift songs, is Come In With The Rain, and it just was the same. I don't know, I don't have anything. I don't even think I listened to it all the way through because I was like, it's the same, nothing new.
Yeah, I,
like,
really she couldn't note any differences for those two specifically, but I did realize that Superstar is kind of a fucking creepy song.
You think so? I it's
dim that spotlight. Tell me things like I can't take my eyes off of you.
I
she's talking about
so.
Someone who's like standing on stage singing to someone he doesn't know.
This is interesting.
It's literally
stuff.
Fan fiction. Superstar is fan fiction.
I've never thought about it that way before. I don't know what I've always thought about it. I've you know, apparently it's like a lot of people's like least favorite. Like when people were ranking the album, a lot of people had Superstar towards the bottom, which kind of surprised
what
me. I was like, I kind of think it's good. I mean, I don't think it's bad. I think it's
all of the songs charted in the top 50 except Superstar.
Really? Like originally?
Yes. Yes. What? Oh no. For the re-records.
Oh, okay. Yeah, people were like, we don't want the song. But, like,
which is
why?
Crazy to me when Jump Then Fall is right there.
I don't get it.
Don't look me in the eye and say that Jump Then Fall is a better song than Superstar.
People believe it. People think it. And I don't, like, lyrically, you're going to look me in my face and tell me that lyrically Jump Then Fall is better than Superstar? It makes no goddamn sense. I would agree that Jump Then Fall is, like, more of a bop, but that's just because of the production.
Jump Then Fall is so annoying to me. That was another re-record that was exactly the same, and I hated it just as much the second time as I did the first a million times.
I've always sort of been like, if it's there, it's there. If it's not, it's not. You know, weird to me that people are like, Jump Then Fall, Jump Then Fall. It's like, why?
Well, Madeline, this is probably the last time we're gonna have this discourse. But what did you think of Today Was a Fairy Tale?
I thought that it was all right. I mean, it was kind of the same. My favorite parts of Today Was a Fairy Tale originally actually were
You have a favorite part?
I do, actually. It was a vocal part too. It was like specifically what I liked about it was her vocals. When she does like the bridge is nice, like the production and the way that she sings it and like the melody is really nice. I always like that. Sounded good on the re-record too. And then when she does the last, It Must Have Been the Way You Kissed Me, and she like goes up, I always really like that too. So and it sounded good in the re-record too. I think I skipped through and I just went to the bridge and then went to the end because those are the two parts that I like. So
you're
an
extremely rude hater, but you know that.
I don't, it makes me like question you when you say that you like Today Was a Fairy Tale, because it's not in line with, and like this is definitely a song that you would hate. I mean, you fucking hate Dorothea and you hate, what's the other one? The one that's like, stay. Like, I mean, but Today Was a Fairy Tale gets to stay. I don't get that.
You know what? Now that you're saying that, it doesn't make any fucking sense that I love Today Was a Fairy Tale. But I think purely by virtue that it was like a Fearless era song before I became like a jaded, like cynical, horrible person. So I think maybe because of that. And also it's the Taylor Squared Association. That's for sure what it is.
Okay, so true. For me it was a dud from the beginning, but I don't know, I was kind of, and also when Speak Now was coming out and I saw the album cover, I fucking hated it because it reminded me of Today Was a Fairy Tale. Like, I thought that Today Was a Fairy Tale was like the measure by which, or the, what am I trying to say, Today Was a Fairy Tale was like a good a good indicator of like what Speak Now was going to be, which it wasn't at all. But like,
well, Today Was a Fairy Tale is more juvenile than many things that are already on Fearless.
The writing sounded like she did it in like 10 minutes.
It's so cute. I don't know why I love it so much.
It's all right. I don't know.
I would put this, if this was on Fearless originally, it would be in my top five for sure.
What did you just fucking say? What did you just honestly say to me? It would be in your top five? What did you
know what, Madeline? It would be in my top three.
No, you're fucking with me. Really?
No, I'm being serious. Three. Forever and always, tell me why.
No.
Today Was a Fairy Tale.
No. It doesn't make any sense. I cannot believe you just said that. I'm going to remember you said that. I'm going to hold it over your head for the rest of your life.
Even if I cut it out, will you remember?
I will remember. It's in my brain, baby. It's not going nowhere.
Well, Madeline's hatred of Happiness aside, I think we were, I would say overall, I was like pleased with the re-records. Like it was good. It was definitely a delicious little treat. It took me down memory lane.
Yeah, that's how I would describe it too. Like it definitely wasn't like, I don't know, what did I think? It was going to change my life or something. It was just a tasty morsel. It, to me, Fearless, it was never the re-record that I was like jonesing for. To me.
Well, that brings me to my next question, which is, how do you feel about the Speak Now re-record, which, you know, should be coming up next, but I have a feeling 1989 is going to be next.
And I think it's going to be 1989, which kind of sucks because I mean, because they're pop songs, it's like they're going to be to the not the letter exactly the fucking same. So it's like, I don't even know why anybody's getting hyped. If there's vault songs, I'll go fucking crazy because that's probably going to be nuts. But like, I'm not really that interested in hearing 1989. And even as a Reputation stan, I'm not really that interested in hearing Reputation re-recorded either, because it's the same shit. It's going to be exactly the same. No difference in vocals. Same production. She's going to have the same fucking team. You know what I mean? It's going to be the same. So Speak Now, though, now that is an interesting little tidbit, because there's some songs on there that are going to be fucking insane redone. Like, for example, Dear John. Let's start there. Last Kiss, of course. Haunted. It's going to be fucking insane. Enchanted. It's going to be fucking insane. Mine, Back to December. I mean,
it's going to be insane hours nuts when Speak Now comes out.
I'm most excited for the Speak Now vault tracks over any of the other vaults. Because to me, it's like, first of all, I think that the Inner Circle and Dark Blue Tennessee, like, they kind of like stopped getting songs, as far as I could tell, right around Speak Now. There were two songs that they had that they were listed as they didn't have, but they knew they existed, one of which was called Castles Crumbling. And that's always been one that stuck in my brain. And I swear to God, if I log in and a vault track from Speak Now is called Castles Crumbling, I'm going to shit myself. Because that to me sounds like the banger of the fucking century. It's like, I have to hear that fucking song. And I've told myself that I have to hear it ever since I was like 15 years old. Like, I have to hear fucking Castles Crumbling. For all I know, it's the worst song ever, mind you. But it's like the Speak Now vaults are in particular very mysterious. And it's like, what kind of shit did she cut off this fucking record? It's like, I can't even imagine. But then it's the same thing with Red, because Red is such a crazy fucking album. It's like, what kind of shit? I mean, we do know like Babe.
Yes, we know Babe and Betterman are going to be involved.
Exactly. But it's like, what about the other ones? Like, who knows what kind of shit she took off that record? Who knows?
Well, I know for Red, she wrote 30 songs. And I think including the deluxe tracks and Babe and Betterman, we're at 24. So there's six potentially very haunting songs that could be coming with Red. Although I don't know, because, you know, Girl at Home was put on the album. So,
you know what I think is that I think that if I were to tell, like, make an assumption, I would think that the songs that got cut from Red because there were too many sad songs on it, which is why Girl at Home was a fucking bonus track, because she was like, let me make a bop. And she fucking forced herself. Yeah, here you go. Here's a little, you know, fucking dog treat for you. This garbage ass song. So it's like, I think
the Speak Now vaults, though, that's an interesting question.
It's because, scary.
Yes, I think that the Inner Circle definitely did stop getting songs for, I want to say, like a 5-year stretch, like between Fearless and I think they started to get some. They allege that they got some around like Red in 1989. But other than that, the rest of the vaults have been very secret. And the 1989 ones, I mean, I can't even imagine what the subject matter would be of those vault songs.
That's the thing. It's like for Fearless and the debut, it's like, some of those songs are just like fucking made up shit. Like That's When is about nothing. Nobody made up. Don't You, nothing. Nobody made up. But
we
like,
were happy. She watched a movie.
Exactly. And but like for fucking Speak Now and especially Red and especially 1989 is like, she has like solid subject matter. She was writing about Jake Gyllenhaal and she was writing about fucking Joe Jonas or not Joe Jonas. Who am I thinking
Harry
of?
Styles.
Harry Styles. She was writing about those two fuckers very specifically. So it's like, oh my God, I wonder if there's like some song where she like,
you know what? The Red re-records might finally unleash the tea, which we have both been absolutely salivating for, which is what the fuck happened with Jake Gyllenhaal.
And I feel like what's weird is that, like, I mean, you get, like, kind of an idea. It's like, oh, he was freaked out by how famous she was, which is, like, a huge catalyst for why she was always thinking, like, nobody's ever going to love me because of all this shit, because of Jake Gyllenhaal, which is fucked. But anyway, that's not even the point. But, like, what specifically, like, what was the conversation? What happened? Did he cheat? Did he just not come to her birthday party? Like, what's the story? I don't know. But even more interesting is for the Reputation vaults, if there are any, if there's any juicy little tidbits about Calvin Harris, I would like to know.
Oh,
inquiring minds want to know.
I have to say, I'm with you on that one. I think the 1989 re-records are going to be pretty boring in general, but I think Rep is going to be the most boring because it's so close to where she is now. And I don't think that Rep is even up for re-recordings for quite a while. Like, I don't think she can do it for a little while.
Not for at least another couple of years. So who knows? I mean, maybe by then I'll be like totally jazzed about it. But right now it's like, I'm not really interested in hearing Reputation re-recorded.
Yeah,
I mean,
but the girls on Twitter can't shut the fuck up about it. I think there's nothing in the vault for Rep, honestly. I think that was a hard album for her to make and she was like kind of drawing blood from a stone with it. So I think that she very purposely like created a narrative and I doubt that there are surpluses from that.
And it's weird to me to imagine like that there would be surpluses from Lover. Because, like, what the fuck? I mean, come on. You said all that you had to say. You had nothing, girl. You had one subject. And that
you
was
said
it.
Way too much.
And she said way too fucking much. Which is, you know, obviously, like, you could argue, like, oh, the pandemic and, like, all these other things kind of culminated to make Folklore. But I think the main thing is that she was like, Joe, I can't just write about you.
I ran out of autobiographical material. It's time to look to the world of fiction.
Exactly. And I think that Lover, I don't know what she thinks about it. I'd really like to like get her to sort of like sit down and have a conversation with me about like, what do you think about the album like as a whole?
Well, like, see, for me, if I were her, I would be ashamed. Just compared to the rest of her work, it really is not on the level of a Taylor Swift album that it should be. So I would love to know if she can like plans to tour that album still, because I think she maybe intended on doing something with it even after the pandemic. But after all the re-records and those two albums, like I don't really see what the point of doing that would be, given that it was a pretty kind of meh received album other than by the fucking teenagers on Twitter.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, whenever I think about Lover, I'm like, I mean, to me, it serves a purpose. Like, I put that shit on and I'll fucking jam. I don't care.
I mean,
like,
we got Cruel Summer, so we literally can't complain.
Cruel Summer, fucking Paper Rings, fucking London Boy. Okay, fucking London Boy, you know, Death by a Thousand Cuts. I mean, these are, I fucking turn, I'll listen to these songs regularly. Miss Americana too. But like, there's so many songs that I have not listened to Daylight. I can't tell you when the last time I heard that song was. No interest. And that's the closing track. That's the closing track. And I could not give a fuck less about it. Same thing with False God. I don't listen to You Need to Calm Down ever.
Oh, never. But when it came out, we were all like, yes, yeah, but now like, yeah, it's more like, no.
Queen.
So what do you think is going to come next, re-records wise? I think it's going to be 1989.
Yeah, 1989 is definitely. And I mean, I would have thought that even without, I would have thought either Red or 1989. And now that she put that fucking snippet of Wildest Dreams in that movie trailer, it's like, that's the same exact thing that happened with Love Story, because she put Love Story in that ridiculous Ryan Reynolds commercial. So it's like, I mean, I don't understand like what her process is. Like, is she working on 1989 now, or is it already done?
Is she doing them? Is she recording them in order, or is she recording them in order of release? It like doesn't really make sense to me.
I wish that she would say more about like what her process has been, because I'm sort of mystified about like how Fearless the re-record got made. Like where, when, with who? Like what? I don't like.
How long?
Like, I have absolutely no fucking concept, because she was doing Folklore and Evermore. And then the next thing you know, she's talking about re-records. It's like, she hasn't stopped. And it's like sort of mind boggling to me. I feel like she's just been fucking making music, and it makes me nervous that she's just going to fucking burn herself out.
Exactly. This is the thing, is that I was so convinced after Lover that there would be a hiatus, and I could not have been more wrong, because it's just been more content than we've ever, ever received. And I'm a little overwhelmed, I have to say. Like the whole point of her getting to that point in Reputation where she had to go away for a while was because she was so overexposed. And I do wonder, like, are we going to verge on that territory by the time the last re-record comes out? Because if the publicity rollout is like this and it's getting this level of attention for every single album, people are going to get sick of it.
Yeah, not us, that's what I was thinking,
but the
too.
Public.
Well, here's what I was thinking. It's like, obviously she wants these fucking records to sell. So it doesn't make any fucking sense to just go every 2 months, here's another one, here's another one, here's another one, here's another
exactly.
one.
Exactly.
Like, by the time you get to fucking 1989 or whatever she does last, nobody's gonna give a fuck.
Yeah, it's a tricky path to chart. We'll obviously care, but this is why I wonder, like, there must be some sort of ideology behind her, like which album she's choosing to release. I think she's gonna go with the ones that are most popular first, like just the ones that were most successful in the first place. But I can't see, even like the stans aren't going to get that excited about the 1989 re-records, because they're going to sound the same. I think it might almost be better to go with Red first, because it's like kind of poppy, still a really well beloved album, but has a bunch of elements that could be improved upon re-recording. But 1989, like, leave it alone.
Well, somebody told me something interesting, which I hadn't thought of before, but somebody said, like, they think that Debut is going to be dead last, because it's like, not only is it like a closing sort of a thing, like full circle, but also it's definitely the one that is going to have the least amount of attention, because it was overall, obviously, her least commercially successful album, because it was the first one. So, and it also, like, I mean, today, I don't think that a lot of people are fucking logging in and going, man, I would love to listen to A Place in This World.
What did you think of the new merch? I thought it was fucking ugly.
Well, the merch that's been coming out, I mean, some of it was cute. I liked the...
I want the Forever and Always t-shirt.
Yeah, I was just about to say, that one is good. That is a good shirt. But the back, it's like, why do I want a fucking track
word
list
on my back.
It's because you can't put tour dates, can you? Because there is no fucking tour. Just slap the titles on there. Like, what?
And it just looks, aesthetically, it looks ugly with all the brackets and the Taylor's version. Like, it's just not what I want.
It looks horrible. Why not just put, like, in big letters, Taylor's version on the back? I'd buy that. I don't give a fuck. But just, like,
also, is it me, or do all of the pictures used in the merch look like fan photos taken on like digital cameras from the audience?
Well, guess what I just fucking read today on Twitter, is that Austin Swift, which I'd forgotten about, he was a tour photographer on the Fearless tour, because he's into photography.
My God, I forgot.
So
about
all
that.
Of those fucking pictures were taken by Austin Swift, because those are the ones that she can use.
Well, we know why his career didn't go anywhere.
We know why. We know why. I mean, they're not like, but they're just not that good. Like, none of the pictures really are like the ones that I would put on a t-shirt.
You know, I only like the Forever and Always one because I love the dress, and I know exactly what moment she's doing that, like, howling at, and that I like. But some of them are just like weird, like, camcorder snaps.
Exactly. I haven't gotten like my physical copies yet or anything, so I haven't looked at the album booklet or any of the like pictures, exclusive pictures or anything. But from what I've seen, they're all just kind of like somebody took this with their camera phone.
All right. So sorry for going off topic a little bit there. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure to, you know, subscribe, follow us everywhere. Also, we want to thank you for 30,000 listeners, which I forgot to tell Madeline. We hit that like,
I am just hearing this for the first time.
So woohoo, we're famous.
Yeah.
And we will see you in the next episode.